And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. We've got a great show today. We're going to spend a full half hour with Cy Peck, a stalwart member of the Juno community, who's going to be, sadly for Juno, but probably happily for him, moving to Hawaii. So Cy Peck Jr. will be in the studio with us. We'll be talking to him about his many years here in Juno, all the stuff that he's done here, especially the stuff he's done here with KTOO. A great career here with KTOO as a journalist and as a volunteer. Going to also be talking to Alaska Boat and Kayak. They're going to be talking about kind of a year-end wrap-up for them. Joy Lyon will be here talking about the Early Learning Carnival happening over at Harborview tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of fun with Jim Cosgrove in attendance there, Mr. Smelly Feet. Yes, that's what he goes by. But first and foremost here today, we've got two ladies in the studio with me right now, Jan Van Slyke. Jan, thanks so much for coming in.
Glad
and Pam Finley.
Here.
Pam, thanks so much for coming in as well. You both are part of McFeeters Hall, and thanks for coming in and letting us know what you've got going. Here we go. First Friday. They come around so quick now, don't they? They're just right upon us.
So many. Every month.
Every time I turn around, it's a First Friday.
Right. That's right.
So you guys have something pretty fun set up for First Friday over at McFeeters Hall.
Yes, two things, really. One is an art sale with all art as well as some antique and vintage pieces. And there's also going to be soup, salad, and bread for $6. So instead of just munching your way through. Well, you can munch your way through First Friday, too.
Right.
But if you want a little more substance, you can stop by and have some real food.
Well, that sounds great, because I get cheesed out, you know, at First Fridays.
Yes,
I mean, the cheese is nice for the first seven stops.
Right.
And then you're like, another cube of cheese, and I'm going
to go
mad.
That's right.
But tell me the idea behind who's doing the cooking and all that stuff.
We're having members of the church, of the Episcopal Church at Holy Trinity are doing the soup, and we have another member is making the bread for us. And we are so fortunate. We have had over 200 pieces of art donated for us so we can build this commercial kitchen connected to McFeeters Hall. That's about the last thing we have to do next to the elevator. But the main thing we want to get finished is the kitchen. And so we are sponsoring this big art sale. And we have items everywhere from $2 up to $250. And we also have a very special piece that people who are collectors of C. Allen Johnson. We have one of his earliest Eskimo figurines for sale. And so you would be just amazed at all the things. Some of them are matted. Most are matted and shrink-wrapped, and some are matted and framed. And you will see anything and everything to fit your taste.
And if you haven't been inside McFeeters Hall, I mean, you know, for me, it still feels like a brand new building, you know.
It still smells
and
like it.
It still smells like it. And it's still, even as you say, under development, the pieces are still being put in place. So it's such a beautiful, gorgeous thing. I mean, truly a wonderful thing came out of a very tragic, you know, event of it burning down. But here we have this beautiful new facility. The community came together and really made it happen.
Well, and actually the community has a chance to come together one more time.
Right.
We're having our Let's Get Cooking campaign. There's an anonymous donor from the community, just a community member, not really a church member, who has pledged $50,000 to match $50,000 in individual contributions from people. And I think we're at about maybe 12, somewhere between 12 and 20 right
what
now.
What a generous
thing
wonderful. To do.
It's
yeah.
a very generous thing to do. And I think McFeeters Hall needs a kitchen. A community hall needs a kitchen.
I mean, for those of us who remember old McFeeters Hall, that was such a key part of what made that such a great place.
Sure, all
was
those
it had that
spaghetti
kitchen.
Feeds and fundraisers and things.
Right.
And there have been people using both McFeeters and the nearby conference hall for food events, but they have to schlep everything in and schlep everything out.
You don't want to have to be schlepping.
No. So
let's stop the schlepping.
We want to do a kitchen. We want to have a real kitchen. And this is, we're happy to take, you know, donations, of course, but also we're having events. We just had a wonderful spectacular, which had great singing. It was worth the price of admission. It really was.
Wow,
we charged a lot, but it was still worth the price of admission. And now the art sale this coming is coming Friday. There are lots of really good things there.
Yeah, give me a little
Sean
rundown.
Sean Faringer, Rima Nose, Richard Sagers, Dan Fruits, Ron Weygandt, Byron Birdsall, Dale DeArmond, Joanne George.
Wow.
Lots of stuff. The Minos
Gallery. So heavy hitters there, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Very definitely.
The Minos Gallery is donating a bin of prints by various artists. So, yes, I think there'll be people, you know, just come and look around. There's going to be a lot of art out, and if you want to stop and eat, you can do that. You can just see the building, too.
Now, is there kind of a fee for the food and that stuff, or how's that all going to work out?
Just $6 for the food, which is next to nothing for a nice bowl of soup and a salad.
There's no fee for just coming in and looking.
Okay, great. Right. And it's such a nice thing to think about McFeeders as a stop on First Friday, too. It gets you up a little bit out of that melee for a moment, and then you can go back in and enter the fray after you've got a nice
fortified
full.
Yourself. It's from 4:30 to 7:30, so you can go there at the beginning or the end or the middle, as you choose.
Give me a little bit of a timeline on the McFeeders Hall
the kitchen
renovation and that stuff.
The match from the anonymous donor, those donations have to be made by December 15th for the match to work. So there's some pressure if people are thinking what they might like to do with a part of their permanent fund dividend that's coming up. You know, you can always donate it to the kitchen.
Of course, K2 has pledge drive.
Well,
coming.
Well, you know, we can all take a little bit.
No, I don't want to say it. It's a good idea.
I know, there's so many worthy things. Understand that. But and certainly the vast majority of this is going to come from the congregation. But it's a small congregation, and it's going to be used by a lot more people.
No, that's right. It's a small town, that's exactly right. It's so much of a community resource. Of course, it's first and foremost part of what the church facility and all the functions that happen there. But, you know, those of us who aren't part of that church, I know McFeeders Hall from just all the great fun events and community events I've been to, plays, all that stuff. Yeah.
After the fire, we did a sort of a retrospective and said, okay, what kind of use was there? And it was about 80% community use and 20% church use.
Yeah, amazing.
I think it's even more community use now because we designed the hall so it could be used for theater groups and for garage bands. It's a better performing space, but also with many performances, I don't know whether people who've been to the Box Society performances afterwards. Bruce Simonson, who's kind of the leader of the Box Society, likes to have a little noshing and a little reception afterwards when people can sit around and talk about the performance. And I think that's a nice tradition for any performance, but we need a kitchen for it.
Is there a total cost? To have a certified commercial-type kitchen costs more than what we think of as a normal kitchen, right?
Unfortunately, it does. The standards for a restaurant kitchen and a kitchen for McFeeders are the same. They both need something called a Class 1 hood, which costs all by itself over $50,000.
Yeah, that is the thing. It's that hood that sucks all the exhaust out, and that is the big
costly item. And it is an amazing piece of machinery. There's a reason why it costs that much. But you really have to have one of those if you're going to have a kitchen even for spaghetti feeds. So that's what really ups the cost. Mm-hmm. Where I think we're sort of the goal we've set is $150,000, which we think should give us the kitchen and with the hood, plus dishes and that kind of thing. So
it's a big goal, but it must feel wonderful to be this close to the sort of end of the rebuilding process.
Yes, it is. This is the crown jewel, you might say, or the very last piece of the crown jewel.
I mean, the whole community has followed this phoenix rising from the ashes.
Yes.
It's such a beautiful building, you know, just a beautiful facility.
Oh, we hope so. I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We wanted to make a nice building for downtown.
Sure, and it's just so great to think that it's really going to be whole again with this kitchen.
Well, we hope so. We hope by, next spring, maybe by next Christmas. We're not sure.
Do you all have a fundraising? Do you have a fundraising goal for the actual art sale? Do you have a dollar amount in mind or something like that, or is it just?
But we do have over $8,000 worth of art for sale. So we are hoping that a large portion of it gets purchased. And this really is sponsored also by the Mustard Seed, which is the little resale shop that we have across from McFeeders Hall. And all the money that we make in the Mustard Seed goes towards the kitchen. We've already given $15,000, and it's run strictly by volunteers and donations from the community. It's amazing to sit in the mustard seed and somebody who will just come by and say, hey, would you like this? And they give us these wonderful treasures. And it's great to have the combination of this sale, and people will be able to see the mustard seed. We will be able to see some of the things that are available. And as I say, inexpensive and expensive, so bring your checkbook. We will have the ability to do Visa cards in purchases over $100. And so we're just thrilled that people will be able to come in and just walk around and see things. The stage will be set up, and also the risers, because we have Aaron Elsmore did the part of the gala event that we just had, and we're leaving the setup because he's getting ready for another Shakespearean event with Theater in the Rough.
Mm-hmm.
So people will be able to see how the new setup with the risers, he has them set up differently than he has in the past. So it's going to be a fun thing just to roam around and visit with your friends in the dry.
Yeah. So First Friday happening at McFeeters Hall starts at
4:30 to 7:30. It's 4th and Gold, or 3rd and Gold, kind of between 3rd and 4th is the door. Come in, look around, have some soup and salad. Sit down, enjoy yourself.
Tour the facility, as
you
said.
Tour the facility.
The whole story of rebuilding this facility is really inspirational. The building itself is inspirational, and I guess that's what a church is all about, right?
It should
inspiration.
Be, in our view.
It
well,
is.
Thanks, Pam and Jan, both for coming in. I appreciate
thank
it
you.
So
thank
much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Unforgettable evening of music, conversation, and much more. I'm Sewell Bailey, the Artistic Director of the Sitka Summer Music Festival, inviting you to join Juno Jazz and Classics as we take an incredible musical journey through all of Bach's 6 suites for unaccompanied cello. Saturday, September 8th at the Egan Library on the campus of the University of Alaska Southeast. For tickets, log on to jazzandclassics.org. I look forward to returning to Juno to share the wonders of Bach with you.
Stinky feet.
Yeah.
My brother's got stinky feet.
Yeah.
Stinky feet.
Yeah.
Stinky feet.
Yeah.
My brother's got stinky feet.
Well, that is not Bach right there. No. That is Mr. Smelly Feet. And is it Mr. Smelly Feet or Mr. Stinky Feet? Jim Cosgrove there, who's going to be part of the Early Learning Carnival coming up. And Joy Lyon and John Bennett are here with me to talk about that. Thanks, both of you, for coming in. I appreciate it.
Sure. Great to be here.
Tell me all about this. Sounds like it's a load of fun. The Early Learning Carnival happening at Harborview tomorrow, starting at 4 o'clock.
That's right. There's going to be all kinds of fun activities for children ages birth to age 5.
And then along with that, as the kids are doing face painting and glow-in-the-dark hand washing and things, there's also a great opportunity for parents to come and get, in one place, learn about all the things going on for to support parents and families in Juneau, which is a lot.
Yeah, so much. So just tell me about like a wrap-up of all the different things that are going to be going on. I see on your flyer here you've got, like, what are some of the resources for parents and things like that, for instance?
Well, there's I work with the Alaska Center for Resource Families, which supports foster and adoptive families. I'll have a booth there. And people who are interested in becoming foster parents or adoptive parents could learn about that. There are so many programs happening in Juneau, and this is just a good place to come where they all come together and parents with whatever needs can learn about what's going on.
Yeah, that's really great.
So there's almost 20 different organizations that are participating. And so it's everyone from Juneau Public Health. There'll be public health nurses there that parents can come and kind of ask those questions that they might have, and they don't have to make an appointment. They just kind of come. And
I see you've got, like, hearing and vision screenings.
Developmental screenings. So, you know, you can come and find out, are your children right on track, or are they, you know,
I know,
concerns?
As a parent, you're always...
Are
they doing good?
So it's very reassuring to know, and it's just really open, and it's free to any parents or anyone with a child age birth to age 5. And so, and there's also going to be booster seats checks. So
tell me about that.
The kids on the move. Well, you know, the car seats are not as simple as you might think. You know, this is like trying to run a high-tech machine, you know, these car seats these days. So a lot of people have car seats that are not installed correctly or not for the right age child. And so the kids on the move folks are going to be there from search, and they're going to do booster seat checks and give information about...
Can they actually go out to the car and check the car? They're going to actually go out and make sure it's buckled in right?
That's right. When you come up, you know, you can just say, oh, there's my, you know...
And this is a long time ago for me, remembering booster seats. But I remember so much getting in there and trying to get it in tight and all that stuff. But you're right. It was like... it seemed like some sort of early medieval torture device sometimes to get that thing in correctly, you know.
That's right. So that's also very reassuring to know that, you know, so this is kind of a combination, health fair for children and also fun fair.
Yeah,
you know?
Very cool, very cool.
There'll be healthy snacks, you know, the WIC folks will be bringing, like, a lot of ideas around healthy snacks. We'll have lots of good refreshments. That'll be a sort of light supper for people, so you don't have to worry about running home.
Now, foster parents and that sort of thing, tell me about what are some of the top types of questions that come up typically when you are talking to people that are interested in that.
Well, they want to know, the number one question that people ask me is usually, how long does it take from the time you start the process? And that can vary. There's not really a clean answer to that.
Is there any ballpark? Is there, it can be from this to this? Or
It should take, I'd say, 3 to 4 months. But if you come in and you have to get fingerprinted and a background check and all that stuff, but they'll take care of that. You don't do that on your own. And then...
is there house checks? And I'm guessing there's all that stuff you have to go through,
You would be assigned a licensing worker who would help you go through all the steps and make sure that all the dots are dotted and I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And they would take care of doing the fingerprinting and the background check. They would make sure that your house had all the things it needed. They would come out and look at your house and then tell you, well, you need a smoke detector and a carbon monoxide detector. And then... you know, basically let you know, you would come to our organization to take an orientation class, which takes about an hour. And we do those a couple of times a month and can arrange them at a moment's notice sometimes. So in the orientation really is the best place to get all your questions answered. But I'll be there. Actually, I'm going to have to leave the carnival early tomorrow, but I'll be there till about 5:30. And can answer those kinds of questions for people at that time.
Yeah. Such a great, valuable thing, a service to provide to sort of open your home to a kid who just, you know, needs that in their life. And
Yeah,
but it seems like such a big step often, right, for families.
Well, it is a big step, but most families handle it pretty well. The thing is it's like getting your feet wet. It's harder to get into it than to maintain it, I think. So it's good that people come to these things and ask the questions and get a feel for it. And once they get going, a lot of foster parents maintain that for years.
Are there kids right now that need that and just don't have it?
Yes.
Where do those kids end up? What's going on?
Well, what happens is kids come into the system, and when a child comes into state's custody, usually the state's first priority is to get that child back with his or her birth parents. But in the meantime, sometimes while the birth parents are working on various issues, they need a placement. Sometimes they'll place a kid in an emergency home, and some parents will take a kid for maybe a month or two maximum under an emergency circumstances. But ideally, if there were more homes out there who were willing to take kids on a longer basis, those kids wouldn't have to get bounced from one home to another. And every time a child gets moved, it's harmful to that child.
As everyone can imagine,
it's
traumatic and tough to move. Yeah.
So if there were more foster homes, more families that were willing to take kids, that part would be eliminated, a lot mm-hmm. of the bouncing would.
Well, this is all very adult. But if you're a kid, why do you want to go to this tomorrow, Joy?
You want to go because there's door prizes. There's fabulous door prizes.
And food.
Every child who comes gets a free book and a door prize. And they're just great. It's like a treasure chest. They get to choose what they want to take home. And they'll also have lots of fun. Like I mentioned, the glow-in-the-dark stuff and face painting and making healthy snacks. And they can make their own name into a bead necklace. And there's like homemade Play-Doh recipes. And so they're going to be, you know, the kids won't know there's a health fair going on. They're just going to think, fun.
In fact, just a little advice, don't tell them it's a health fair.
Yeah, don't tell them it's a health fair. That's why it's a carnival.
It's a carnival.
And there's other kids there.
That's right. Oh, yeah. And we're expecting, last year we had about 200 children.
That's what I was going to ask.
And we have door prizes for 350.
200 kids showed up last year. Yeah. Wow, that's great.
And it's, you know, and it didn't feel, though, overly crowded or anything. It's very, you know, we have Harborview School.
Yeah, it's
so
a school.
It's the whole gym, and we have a lot of classrooms, too, for the different screenings. And, you know, really thanks to the school district for being a strong partner in this whole project for, you know, providing this space. And
well, it's the Early Learning Carnival. It's happening tomorrow at Harborview. It goes from 4 to 7. And it's especially for, as you were saying, especially for children from birth to five,
mm-hmm,
in that
mm-hmm.
range. And then, as you were saying, John, but also for parents and for people that are also interested in the possibly being a foster family or just interested in information on that as well.
Right. And it would be also good for people who, pregnant women and who are starting a family but they don't have children yet, would learn a lot about the services that are available across the spectrum out there.
Oh, okay.
So
that's great.
They can sign up for things like, they can sign up for the Dolly Parton Imagination Library there tomorrow.
Okay.
If they're not already part of that, where they get a free book every month in the mail, along with a parent bulletin that tells you about all the fun free activities for kids in Juneau. So, and they'll get information about the Turf for Tots program, that at the field house, and they'll get entered into a drawing for a free pass for the Diamond Park Aquatic Center.
Great. So, lots of fun stuff going on. All right.
It's the place to be tomorrow at 4, between 4 and 7.
Tomorrow at 4 at Harborview Elementary School. It's the Early Learning Carnival. John, Joy, thanks so much for coming in and letting us know about this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Andy.
And a little bit more of Mr. Stinky Feet here.
All right. Wipe and powder those buds. Baby brother giggles because it's so much fun. Mama gives a hug and let's play on the rug. And with a goofy looking grin, he goes goody, goody, goody as we hop and dance and sing.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, September the 5th, 2012. The birthday of Ward Just, born in Michigan City, Indiana, 1935, author of more than a dozen books of fiction, including The Congressman Who Loved Flaubert, The American Blues, The American Ambassador, Jack Gantz, and others. started out as a journalist, came from a family of journalists. The family published the town newspaper, went off to college, dropped out of college, came home to be a full-time journalist. By the time he was in his mid-20s, he was writing for Newsweek and then the Washington Post, went to Saigon, covered the Vietnam War, was seriously wounded by shrapnel from a grenade, came back to the States to recover, wrote a book about Vietnam, and then he quit journalism and launched into fiction. His book, Exiles in the Garden, begins, "Especially when he was alone, Alec Malone had the habit of slipping into reverie, a semi-conscious state not to be confused with dreams. His reveries presented a kind of abstract grandeur, expressionist canvases in close focus, untitled. The reveries had been with him since childhood, and he treated them like old friends paying a visit." It's the birthday of the journalist Jonathan Kozol, born in Boston 1936, taught in a public school in Boston, has written many books about public education in this country and about how segregated our schools still are. Books include Savage Inequalities, Children in America's Schools, and Amazing Grace, The Lives of Children and the Conscience of a Nation, about kids in the Mott Haven neighborhood in the South Bronx. Jonathan Kozol, who said, "Pick battles big enough to matter, small enough to win." And it was on this day, 1957, that Jack Kerouac's book On the Road was published, based on the trip he took across the country 10 years before. Starting out in New York, rode a trolley to the edge of Yonkers, wanted to hitchhike, got to Route 6 at the Connecticut border. There was a big rainstorm, no cars picked him up. He gave up, went back to New York, bought a bus ticket to Chicago, and there he started hitchhiking. Stayed in YMCAs and cheap hotels, crossed the Mississippi. In Omaha, he saw his first real cowboy, rode on the back of a flatbed truck with a group of hobos. He knew he wanted to write about it, and finally, in April of 1951, Kerouac sat down at his kitchen table, wound a continuous roll of paper into a typewriter, tuned his radio to an all-night jazz station, and in 20 days he had the first draft of his new novel. He told the basically true story of his adventures with Neil Cassady, his friend, changed Cassady's name to Dean Moriarty, his own name to Sal Paradise, and it came out on this day in 1957. Here's a poem for today by Lucy Shaw, entitled Wrong Turn. "I took a wrong turn the other day, a mistake, but it led me to the shop where I found the very thing I'd been searching for. With my brother, I opened a packet of old letters from my mother and saw a side of her that sweetened what had been deeply sour. Later that day, the radio sang a song from a time when I was discovering love and folded me into itself again." Wrong Turn, a poem by Lucy Shaw from her collection What the Light Was Like, published by Word Farm and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Are you considering other educational options for your student? Then consider HomeBridge, a program that builds the link between school and home. HomeBridge allows up to 2 classes at local high schools with no allotment reduction and makes sports, theater, and other activities possible within the Juneau School District. HomeBridge offers parents a direct educational connection with their K through 12th grader. Call 209-HOME today to enroll for next fall.
Home boy. Home boy.
want to make a quick correction. On my last interview there, I was saying that Mr. Stinky Feet was going to appear tomorrow. He's not. He's appearing Sunday.
Who's that?
That's Mr. Stinky Feet's going to be appearing Sunday. Hold on. I've got Cy Peck in the studio with me here, but let me just... I got to clear something up here, Cy. Hold on a minute. Well, he's got to be appearing Sunday, September 30th at 2 p.m. at the JDHS for a Montessori school benefit. Also, just want to let people know of the weather forecast, which you're not going to have to deal with this kind of weather soon, Cy. We got rain in the forecast. Highs around 56 degrees. Tonight, rain as well, and mostly cloudy skies tomorrow. Partly cloudy, though, for Thursday night, but then increasing clouds again Friday and a chance of rain. So it looks like we got rain in the forecast, and in through the weekend, rain, too. Something you may not have to worry about those cold, rainy southeast days soon, huh, Cy Peck Jr.?
That's true.
Thanks so much for coming in and talking with us. Cy Peck Jr. is here. The Raven is here to talk to us about many things. Just got a little bit of time here to talk to you about a lot of different stuff here. But I wanted to start first and foremost by saying, hey, you're moving. What's going on? Moving to Maui, huh?
Yeah, well, I think... it's just one of those times when you have to turn the page and continue on. And my friends just won't let me be a couch potato.
As much as you
they
want to
real
be.
Close.
So you've got a little bit. You've been going to Maui for a while now. It's kind of a second place you've been going to quite a bit. Is that right?
Yes, and I've been... there just to see whether I could stand the weather and stand the bugs and stand the people.
And it passed the test,
the waves.
I'm guessing.
But they all come together okay and have a chance to meet some of the medicine people over there, the Kunas, they call them Kunas, and also met with the original Hawaiians. And they segregate themselves from all the others. They know that they're the first ones to land in Maui. So I did a ceremony for them and the people that came the first time, that in their graves, I did a ceremony for that. And then they have a big temple that looks just like the Mayans. And this guy's named Bully. And I did a ceremony for his tribe, his people, and then I guess one of these tribal members is going to go back to New Zealand, where they originated from, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a sacred journey. Six canoes are going to paddle back, and right now they're working on how they, the foods that they took with them.
So they're saying that they're derived from the Maori yeah. people of New Zealand, is that right?
Right, okay. And also from Samoa.
Okay.
And from other places, Trinidad, some of these places mm-hmm. All seem to come together.
Mm-hmm.
And they live around Hana. And there's a jungle there on one side, and then a real peaceful village they call Hana. And a lot of movie stars live in the jungle part. Chris Christopherson, let's see, a few others that live there. And you don't know they really live there because they're right in the jungle. And so a lot of times they...
And they're not there to be found. That's the other thing, right?
Absolutely right, because they have this telephone pole. And then as soon as they see the white flag go up, then that means they want to be left alone.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
They have a little system worked out there.
They have a system.
Mr. Christopherson does not want to be bothered right now. Well, Cy, let's just back up a little bit. I mean, it's fair. You have a long history here. Of course, your family has a long history in Southeast Alaska. Mm-hmm. Maybe just for people who aren't familiar with it, could you just talk to us a little bit about...
Well, my father was Dr. Cyrus Peck. He was the Grand Secretary of the Alaska Native Brotherhood, served as the president in 1949, and he was very instrumental in a lot of the things that happened here in Juneau. The bus Bartlett Memorial and places like that. also served with the Salvation Army as one of the directors and worked with the Selective Service.
And just one of the most respected elders as he as he aged and even in fairly recent years.
Right, and he ran the Princeton Hall, which Kathy Ruddy has, and that was called the Presbyterian Navy. they had other boats, Sheldon Jackson the second, and a few other boats from Sitka. And they were all built in Sitka. Sitka used to have a lot of boat shops from the village around Sheldon Jackson all the way down to the village, the end of the village, the Howards. They had big boat shops there. And, of course, Andy Hope had a boat shop, and my uncle worked with him, David Price. So I used to go down there and jump in the sawdust and saw boats being built.
Oh, wow. And Angoon is kind of the,
this is in Sitka.
This is in Sitka. Okay.
Yeah, although I was born in Angoon.
You were born in Angoon.
Right.
Okay. All right.
The Beaver people.
And that's where your father lived in his later years. Is that right?
In Tlingit culture, you have to follow the woman. So my mom is from Angoon. She's a Beaver. My dad is from Klukwan and Sitka, and so he moved to Angoon. And at one time, there were the Bear Clan, and then the Killer Whales, and then the Wolf Clan.
And you just referred, as we were first talking there, about performing ceremonies. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what your role is there, what your role is as performing a Native ceremony?
The Native American ceremonies. A lot of information about these people were underground. The elders knew the rituals and all, so I had to go to a lot of the elders at that time. I was a young guy.
And it's because it's such an oral history, right? I mean, it has to be passed to person.
Gesture to gesture and how you speak. Because in the old days, they didn't have sound reinforcement. So whenever they told a story, they told it in a certain way. And so so that everyone in the tribal house could hear them. So that's how they told stories and how they began the potlatches.
These are people that sort of just help me put context on that. Mm-hmm. These are people who are they sometimes entertainers,
right.
Storytellers? Are they historians?
A potlatch is a payback. When a person dies, especially, let's say my mother died, of course, and I'm Raven, so the eagles would be the people who would help them through these times. So at a potlatch, the beaver ravens would of course be the host to the eagles. So that's when they paid, and they used to call it payoff parties to the legislatures. Every one of them are cringing right now. But then they changed the name, and every once in a while they change their name, of course. But I did a documentary called Some Call It Potlatch, and Jim Gordon and Janet Lemansky, we went to 3 potlatches and filmed them all. And that was the first time any potlatch was ever filmed. And also...
Now that must have been just getting the permissions.
Right. The women.
Right.
You work through
okay.
the women. When I was doing a lot of the documentation, I would ask the women for the okays to film, let's say, the Alaska Native Brotherhood. So they would vote on it, and they would sponsor the show.
Well, you mentioned documentaries, and that I wanted to talk a little bit then about your role here and your long history here at K2. Mm-hmm. A lot of people might know you as a jazz host or
right.
as the host of Southeast Native Radio, or mm-hmm. there's all these different roles. But how did you get started here at K2? When was that?
Dave Brook was programs director back when it was in the tin can, spam can.
The spam can.
Yeah, the spam can. So he asked me to come down, and because he needs someone who's sound at Tlingit. So I went down there, and other people tried out,
which
too.
You do, I think.
Pardon?
I think you do sound Tlingit.
Yeah. Finally.
I don't know how you...
You'd but, think some of my best friends were Tlingit or something.
So, I'm sorry, keep going. So you went down just because you had a voice that he was
right,
looking for.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a short sentence. So, but anyway, he asked me, would I care to try out to be a disc jockey? So I said, sure, you know, and of course. And so I would say sure to everything, even now. You know, you
yeah,
never know when it's going to
That's how I got
be
you
the
in the
one,
studio
you know?
Here. Yeah, man. How else did it?
So anyway, I started this show. In a few minutes, John Ingalls called him and said, wow, what a great show. So that was the first time that I kind of thought, well, maybe there's a chance I could do this show. So,
and was that the jazz show?
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was only half hour.
Okay.
And I'd played a lot of Dixieland, and right away there was a lot of listeners.
How did you develop a knowledge and love of jazz?
From my uncle Matthew Fred in Angoon. He was a musician, very well known performer. He played at a lot of the canneries and. During the Saturdays, and he'd pick up a band, and Cyril George would be one of the guys that would play with him, and Harry Jones, and a few other people in Anglin. And then he
Were these guys good?
Oh, yeah.
They were pretty
well,
good?
Well, one of the things, they used to have bands that went from village to village, and they would play instead of basketball teams, so they would... Matt LaCatla would come up to Sitka, and some of these others would go down to Matt LaCatla, and they would. These were bands. So my dad played in a band in Sitka, so that's how I got to know. Even Juno had a Juno Native band, and so they had their practices. And when I was young in Angoon, I'd be walking by some of the homes there, and I hear them practicing, you know, trombone or tenor sax or trumpet. So they were always practicing every day.
Wow! So there were specific native bands in each community,
right?
That would,
and some had gone to Chicago Conservatory of Music. Their maestros or their doctorates already in Metlakatla. So they sounded real, real good. And a lot of times they memorized a lot of the music because they marched.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And maybe improvised and did all those
right.
great things.
Right, yeah. So jazz was, of course, a cousin to classical music.
Yeah, right. Wow, yeah. That's a part of Southeast history I've never heard before, that there were these jazz bands traveling around.
Yes, that was, and then my dad was a concert violinist. He played a lot of concerts around Juneau and Sitka and Metlakatla and Coquan.
I mean, he was an extremely multifaceted and talented
he
person.
He was,
in many ways.
Just about anything he picked up, he seemed to be good at it.
Well, those people just like makes that. You mad, you know?
Yeah. He'd be practicing all year, and he'd pick it up once and sound like Wynton Marsalis.
Yeah, just amazing, right? Yeah, just right off the... Well, right. Tell me a little bit about... So that was sort of the beginning of the jazz show. Then you started getting into some more journalistic-type shows, things
right.
like History Without Headlines and Southeast Native Radio. How did that develop, and what were some of the experiences
Alaska
there?
Alaska Native News was the first one. I went out and interviewed people that were into working in Juneau. Fishermen, people who were professional at what they did, each day I would go out and interview one of the native people. I just felt that I wanted them to tell their story too, And so I learned how to do the recording and editing and things like that.
Back in the days when you had the razor blade and all that. Yeah.
Right, with a razor blade.
Yeah.
And so, I'd be a lot of times stayed up until about 3 or 4 in the morning editing a show. But I was doing a show called The Chiefs. I was also recording with John Engels, William Ackerman, a member, George Winston, I recorded them, Queen Ida, you know. And I give a lot of credit to John because he was the first person to call in, he and Rachel.
Yeah, and they're, of course, longtime listeners here
at
K2
right.
And a big
sure.
part of the K2 community.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's listen to a little jazz here for just a second. We'll come back. We're talking to Cy Peck Jr. right now. He is, sadly for us, moving to Maui. I'm sure you'll be back and forth a little bit to Juneau.
Well, I got a lot of offers.
Yes.
You know, there from
a lot
producers.
A lot of irons in the fire.
Right.
You got to keep them hot. All right. Well, we're going to just hear a little bit. This is... I think we got some Coltrane queued up here, and we'll get to this, and we'll come right back and talk more to Cy here in just a second. John Coltrane there. I hear a Rhapsody, name of that tune. Well, rain is in the forecast for today and tonight, and guess what? Tomorrow and the next day too. Yeah, we got some rain in the forecast coming up through the weekend at least, and even into next week it's looking like some flirting with some partly cloudy skies for Thursday night, but mostly we've got chances of rain coming up. That's all right, it's fall. We come to expect that. It's September, right, Cy?
Well, there's only one weather forecast for Juneau, and that's rain. It's raining or it's going to rain.
That's right. And there's only one forecast for Maui. It's sunny or it's going to be sunny. And that's where you're headed. That's why we're taking the opportunity to have a discussion here with Cy Peck Jr. about his years in Juneau and his years at K2, and want to talk a little bit about also your fun connections, brush with famous and brushes with greatness and stuff like that, too. But I wanted to just real briefly talk a little bit more about, we were talking already about some of the work you did with K2. One of the things that was an award-winning documentary you did for K through K2 was Drinking Dramas, and
right.
I wanted to just talk to you about
that. Oh, that was a real masterpiece. Not that I produced it, but because it was written by people who were under the addiction of alcohol, drugs, and whatever had you, whatever was there, and there were four people who told their story, and then we added the sound effects to it, and I think that's probably what got the. But the stories were amazing. They had four alcoholics and drug addicts, and they told their story, and also.
Now, this is something that you've, without getting too personal, you've had some personal
that's right.
experience with alcohol.
That's true, addiction. And so I knew that what they were telling was their absolute truth. You know.
Yeah, you could fact check that yourself. No,
right. This was something that they told from the heart. And we added the sound effects, like this woman would be talking, thinking, as she was at a stop sign, and we'd hear the windshield wiper going and things like that, and cars coming. And
so
and
made,
we, and
little,
we did yeah. this with, I did this with Dave Brook, and at the time, K2 was in transition. They were going up to the 5th Street studios, and we had to be on the floor as we're editing when we had a couple reel-to-reel recorders.
Mm-hmm, this old TX,
probably.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But as it turned out, it was I felt it was a masterpiece.
Just to hear the people's stories in their own voice.
Right.
Written.
Right.
Them telling their own stories.
Right. You know? And then they would go into a scene where they were talking to someone, so we had someone talking. But yet, it was their story.
Was the idea behind it that they had found a way out, or were there cases
right.
where they hadn't yet?
Some of them didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them didn't, and some still had their wishful thinking and things like that. And I felt that was it was a true story from beginning to end. Some who never made it, and some who did. And I think this is. A beautiful story, Margot Melnikov sent it in, I was hoping that she sent in another one called The Fishing People. This is about a woman, a fisherman out of Petersburg, and she was the captain, and she told the stories of how she was a halibut fisherman, you know, how mm-hmm. she reeled in the boat, and you could hear all the boat being, you know, like it was pulling in a halibut. So I felt that was another one that I wanted to send in.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been many. There have
yeah.
been many. And I appreciate the time that K2 gave me, and they, you know, broadcast a lot of the programs that I did.
Well, in return, you gave great programming to K2, especially, I mean, not especially, but for me, I knew you best as the Raven, the host of
Raven.
The greatest jazz show on earth, one of the best named shows on earth.
In the cosmos.
Yes. And I just wanted to give you a thank you, because the one thing I wanted to tell you about was just, I sort of can't even count how many friends of mine have said that their first experience with getting on a board on K2 was they got to come in and you would show them how to work the board at K2 as sort of guest hosts on the greatest jazz show on earth. And so maybe just thank you for those folks who haven't maybe had a chance to thank you in person. But it seems like that is a part of your
right.
mission that you've had in life, too, is not only to have this knowledge and wealth of knowledge, but
right.
to try to spread it.
Right. And Grace is one of them, and a few others, and it was really fun to see them, you know, hear them, a lot of times I went through the how you do things. Then I would leave, you know. They'd have the records all signed. And then the record would be coming to an end. They'd be pulling their hair. but I just stayed outside, you know, let them. And pretty soon they'd find out, and off they go.
It's an important lesson to learn in radio that dead air isn't necessarily life or death. There's worse things in the world than 5 seconds of silence. I've proven that many times.
Yeah, me too.
People just wish they'd hear 5 seconds of silence from me.
In cereal, of course.
That's right. Well, let's talk about a little bit of a fun thing, too, which is this really... So you go from producing documentaries about pretty gritty and tough things happening here with folks in Southeast Alaska to rubbing shoulders with the movie stars, the likes of Chris Christopherson or Steven Seagal, and I know Steven Seagal is particularly a good friend of yours.
Right.
And how did you get into meeting, for instance, Steven Seagal? Tell me the story of meeting Steven Seagal.
Well, I was doing a ceremony for factions of how to manage wolves, and pretty soon it got a little heated up. So someone came and asked me if I'd do a ceremony, kind of quiet things down. And so I did, and it just so happened somebody had a camera. And so they filmed the whole thing and sent it on to Warner Brothers. And it just so happened Steven Seagal saw it and said, bring him around, bring him up, you know. And so he chartered a plane, everywhere went he chartered. And so I got to meet him, and we were friends after that, and you know, we'd spend time going out to breakfast or dinner, and he'd tell me about the way he did things in the movies. And so I had a chance to spend some time while he was filming on Daily Ground. Asked me about the Vision Quest, so I talked to him about that, about the bear, and so that was in there, even one of my feathers as part of it. And also he talked about music because he's a great guitarist.
People don't know this about Steven Seagal, but he is legitimately a really great guitarist.
Right.
Has a blues band.
Right.
And sort of focuses on blues.
He does all his music for his movies. I got to see that in Paramount when the big orchestra was playing for the music for On Deadly Ground, and.
Learn any moves? Can you learn any, you know, defense?
Well, he had a lot of bodyguards, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't about the men. The bodyguards were for the women.
All right. Well, that's life in the movies, I guess, right?
And then I got to meet Robert Watts, who produced Star Wars and Indiana Jones, and we were talking about crop circles, and then he while I was doing the ceremony for Steven Seagal, a call came in, and he picked it up during the ceremony, and he said, "Oh, I just want to let you all know," he said, "we got the rights to do In the Spirit of Crazy Horse." So he said, "Boy, that ceremony works."
Oh, there you go. All right. Now, is that one that's in the works, or?
No. I guess he got the rights to do it. And I think one of the producers was telling him, you know, he's a little old now. He should be the attorney.
Okay.
So from that on, it still has it.
These things stay in development forever.
Yeah, I go down around Christmas and spend time with him. And also Monty Roberts, the horse whisperer.
Yes.
Spend time with him. And
he's a fascinating, utterly fascinating person.
Right.
Led an amazing life.
Right.
James Dean's good friend and all that stuff.
Yeah. And it was, you know, just a great, great trip. Meeting Les Paul was, it was a real miracle. I just happened to be in front, and he stopped the music, and he said, "Come on up." So I went up there, and I started telling jokes. You know, I mean, he thought it was real funny. Everything I said, he'd be laughing. I started out by saying that Paul Allen and Bill Gates always come up on the big tour ship. He's come up 2 or 3 times. I think he's trying to buy Juno.
Well,
and he didn't know who the Clinkets were, too.
Oh, yeah.
I finally had to say, well, we're the ones who carved the totem poles. And he said, oh, okay.
Okay, there. Now it's cleared everything up.
Cleared everything up.
Well, Cy, I feel like we've just scratched the surface. We've got to cut it
short. I know. High volumes.
We need to get those reel-to-reel tapes out and start recording again. But thank you so much for coming in. Oh. Have a great time in Maui. Do you have some folks to thank or something?
Okay. I really do.
Sure,
go ahead. I want to thank those who supported me along the way, John Engels and Rachel, Janet Lemansky and Jim Gordon, Barry Roderick and Bob Sylvester, Jeff Brown, Judy Hall, Dave Brook, Connie Monroe, Charlie Payne, Jim Mahan, and Dennis Harris.
All right. Well, thank you, Cy, for all you've given us as well. We appreciate it. I'm sure I'm speaking for all those folks by saying thank you and have a wonderful time in Maui, and I'm sure we will see you here soon enough. All right.
Thank you,
Juno. Cy Peck Jr. And thanks, everyone, for listening in to June Afternoon. We're going to join All Things Considered in just a moment.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.